Say hi to spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 4/29, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.
Welcome to another episode of Golden State of Mindcast. Ivan Betker here with Nate Parham and Bram Kinchelow. It's been like a month, I think, since we last sat down without a guest and just talked Warriors. So I'm excited. It's high time. It's been kind of a crazy, so Warriors 54-5 right now, which is still ridiculous. Absolutely like stunning. But, since the All-Star break, it's been kind of rough. We've had two overtime games in a row, and some other close ones. And then even this much publicized blow up by Draymond Green, during halftime of that Thunder game. So I kind of wanted to start out with that. There's two things about it, I think. One is whether it's going to be something that we should worry about as far as how it affects a team and how it affects chemistry and whether Draymond is, like, going off the rails, and whether we should be worried about, like, you know, team discord and everything. But the other side, and I think that's been kind of maybe discussed to death by mainstream media, I don't know. But the other side of it is kind of looking at what Draymond was yelling about, which is he's not getting enough shots, and so it is kind of true. And just looking at the stats, since Kerr came back, he's getting far less shot attempts, less than 7 attempts per game compared to 11 under Walton, and only 3-point attempts a game compared to 3.6 under Walton. So that's a lot of stuff to throw out there. Bram, what do you think? Is this really a problem? Like, should Draymond be getting more shots?
Well, I think that, honestly, theoretically, all those shots come in the flow of the offense. And obviously the offense has changed slightly, you know, or greatly since Kerr came back. I think that when you have somebody like Stephen Curry, it's hard to allocate shots to anyone other than him, almost, you know, especially even with Clay on the team as well. I don't know if it's a problem. I don't know if those numbers would necessarily hold throughout the season. I'm not sure if it's something that Kerr is doing to specifically try to take Draymond out of the game. I would be surprised if that was the case, because I know that Kerr has been one of Draymond's biggest sort of supporters all this time. But I think that it is an interesting thing to look at and to think about and to just kind of, I'm curious as to how that translates for the last couple, you know, the last third of the season or whatever that we're about to embark upon, you know, and how Draymond can handle it and how, you saw last night where when they played the Hawks that he, you know, he hit that crazy shot to end it, which I'm sure we'll get to eventually, but he almost willed the team to the victory. It was really Draymond and co. And he took on, you know, that element of leadership that he always has, but with that, with Curry sitting, he was really able to like flex his muscles in a different way. But I think, assuming everybody is healthy, it's tough to find shots. And for him, he can do so many other things. And I think that that's probably what Kerr is trying to capitalize upon, is just that, like, I think Kerr probably wants him to be more of a facilitator or more of a rebounder or more of a, you know, just kind of like all around glue guy, as opposed to taking those 11 shots per game, you know, which maybe, you know, obviously if Steph takes those extra 2.7 shots per game, like, it's, you know, the chances that they're going to score more points are higher. So I don't know. It's an interesting predicament.
Nate, do you think it's a symptom of, Draymond maybe not shooting threes as well or shooting at all, like percentage wise, or does that go in the other way? Maybe he's not shooting as well because he's not getting as much attempts. Is that something that Kerr is paying attention to?
Well, you can definitely see him hesitating now. He's passing up threes that he was taking under Walton. And I think where what Kerr is saying makes some sense. And it's kind of just like, don't take them early in the shot clock. Wait till the set unfolds before you take them. And you know, we don't need you taking as many threes as you're taking. That kind of makes sense. But I think you definitely see him hesitating. And I think once you start hesitating when you're shooting, you start having to think about it at all, as a shooter, that's just, you know, that's going to kill you. It's going to kill your rhythm. It's going to make it impossible to get into a rhythm if you're constantly thinking about your shots. But also, I think we have to remember the context of what happened here. I mean, national TV game in OKC, they play like garbage the first half of that game, getting killed in the boards. So it's a relatively physical game, and he wasn't contributing anything offensively. So there's a lot of frustration to go around there. Obviously the guy wants to help his team, and at the same time, he's been, you know, sort of been, reined in a little bit by Kerr. So, I'm really trying not to read much into this, although it's, okay. I mean, can you imagine the number of teams where this would kind of just be like, you know, sort of like a small bump of the road, like a small short piece of a story and people move on. The reason this is a story is because we've imagined these guys to be choir boys for so long. And now we have a big blow up and we're like, oh my gosh, it could be trouble. But look at these guys. I mean, these are the same guys who are singing like, I'm in love with a Coco on the plane last year. And this is a great unit. They didn't just suddenly fall apart because Draymond is tearing them apart because he's got money now or something crazy.
Well, no, totally. Yeah.
I mean, it's just like this. That's, I just don't believe that. I think that was just a frustrating moment in a season where they're 54-5. Of course, I mean, which is even crazier. But, and I also think that one of the cool things about Draymond Green, I think is important, is that he wants them to play well every single quarter of every single game. And he believes in that as being part of the championship standard. I just think he got frustrated by the situation, and I'm willing to say it's just a small thing that will not come up again.
I mean, not worried about that, but I still want to kind of figure out like why Kerr has decided to, you know, kind of rein him in a little bit from the 3-point line. And I'm looking, trying to get these numbers together on the fly. It looks like he was shooting about 48% under Walton overall, and that's actually ticked up to like 52 under Kerr. But yeah, his 3-point percentage is way down to 32% in the last 15-16 games, compared to 40, almost 41% under Walton. So, I mean, it's interesting. Let's see if he started shooting threes worse before Walton did decide to rein him in. Yeah. I don't know about that, but. I mean, this is a team that had only lost 4 games. You know, the system was perfect.
Yeah.
Walton, coach of the year, you know, he did everything that, it's interesting that would even be an issue that Kerr would even mess with it and start switching it up if he really is. Maybe it is just, Draymond being more tentative, which is certainly possible.
I just want to just point out the fact that we're nitpicking so deeply right now.
I know we have to,
because here we are doing a show. But like, are you? There's so many words I want to use that I can't. But it's intense, the levels to which we have to go to find discord in this team. And I think that, again, like that's something. Like you're talking about other teams, this would just be like a tiny bump in the road, but because of the national attention and because they're the Warriors and because they're 54-5, you know, I mean, imagine how many times like Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant cussed out their teammates and there just didn't happen to be a sideline reporter in like right outside the locker room to hear it. And that stuff just stays under wraps and those teams still exist in whatever sort of harmonious zone they've designated as for that season, you know? I mean, like, thinking of Draymond as some sort of malcontent is so far from the truth as far as what I've seen from this team. I mean, you could easily say that about Kobe or whoever, like any of those players that really actually chewed out their teams. But I think for Draymond, like, it's not. I mean, he just was upset.
In fairness, though, we are avoiding Ivan's question, which is,
I know,
was there a legitimate reason to tell Draymond something about limiting his shots per game or specifically threes per game? And I think that's, you know, it's an interesting question. I think we'd have to break it down a little bit further in terms of, I mean, what I recall hearing or reading, and I'll have to dig up the article afterwards so you can post it with the podcast. But what I recall reading was that, you know, part of it was just not rushing the shots. So, and there were some times when Draymond rushed some, and I think that's all it was. But I think, so it would be interesting to look at stats like early in the shot clock, you know, locations of the floor, and like if there's places where you could say, wow, Draymond really shouldn't be shooting those shots. But I mean, if you watch him closely now, he really is hesitating on taking shots that he has space to shoot. And I think that to me is you know, that seems antithetical to what the Warriors have been this year, which is a team that's kind of free flowing. Players know their roles and players kind of do take advantage of the opportunities they get when they get them. And now you're seeing Draymond hesitate a little. So, you know, there's something going on there, but in terms of what Kerr would like to see from his offense, but, you know, let's see where they are in the playoffs, maybe at the playoff time, and see where they are in terms of what Kerr maybe wants to smooth out with their offense.
Like the whole thing about robot, you know, I'm not a robot, which is just hysterical and weird. but on top of that, like what spurred that on? Is it that Kerr is trying to have more of a you know, at this point in the season, trying to refine the system a little bit better and have players play a little more specific roles, and thus kind of moving away from that free flowing offense that we have enjoyed so much, and that has you know, on a historic pace. Like it'll be interesting to see if that continues, and we should really look at it kind of deeper stats, like number of passes per game, like how that's changed, right, and things like that. Kind of pivoting to another question I had, which is that, you know, it kind of does feel like the last few games since the All-Star break, it's been a little bit of a struggle. I mean, we had the Portland game, which, you know, I was there for, and I will have burned in my brain forever.
I'm sorry.
It was rough. And, you know, we had two overtime games just now. And I mean, I know that the last game, Curry was sitting, as well as Iguodala. So that might be kind of one that you can throw out. And they won anyway, but like, it, you know, do you think the teams are playing them differently since the All-Star game, or, you know, is there, anything that we should be worried about that's kind of standing out?
Jeez. You know, I guess we talked about this before, or maybe I was talking about it with someone else, but it seems as though there's quarters where their effort just isn't there. Like entire quarters of time where it's just not where it needs to be. I don't know what that is. That's fatigue. Like the Portland game, you were there. I mean, they barely showed up to that game, as far as I'm concerned. I just didn't think they were there, and it just looked like a team. It did not look like the team we saw from before the All-Star break. You know, some of those things that, and this is the funny thing. Apparently Randy Whitman made a statement today, like analytics don't win basketball games. This is the really interesting thing about the analytics movement. I'm not at all critiquing it. I think numbers are what I look at, what a lot of people look at. But the thing it does miss is like, what is this mental side of things that seems to be shaky is not the word, but they seem to lose focus occasionally. And when they lose focus, it can be disastrous. And it's because they run an offense that requires precision, movement, timing. And if you have any two, three parts of that system falling apart at any given time, it's going to look terrible. And I think that's a lot of what's happening. They don't really run a whole lot of stuff that you can have two or three guys zone out with. But is there like anything specific that I'd be worried about for the playoffs? I think they're going to lock in the playoffs and they'll be fine. If there's any one of those games that was more troubling, I thought the way they came out in the OKC game was a little bit troubling. Only because I was like, this is a game they had to be up for. They had all their pieces in place. They obviously didn't have Azili, but they had everything they needed, and they just did not look like a team that was that was engaged in the first half.
What a crazy game. We should really talk about that for a minute, because you're right. They didn't really throughout the game. I didn't think they looked good at all, except for Curry, who was just doing like superhero nonsense.
Right.
Like they missed, you know, five or six wide open, you know, bunny layups, missing free throws. Like even Curry missed a free throw, and then, so they're missing the wide open layups, and then Curry's hitting 30 footers to like make up for it. It was insane.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And what? How do you explain that? I mean, you can't explain that with anything. The only people who I really think can explain that are the people in the locker room. It's only those group of guys that can explain why they came out that way that game. And I'm just guessing that the team who has been on this pace before was one team. They had Michael Jordan. I mean, to be able to maintain this kind of focus is just, there's a reason no one else gets there. It takes so much to maintain this type of focus to stay on this pace. And we're just seeing why teams don't get there to me. It's so hard to get through it. And Curry, you need a Curry or a Jordan to bail you out. And I'm not mean to compare Curry and Jordan that way or dismiss any other stars from before current, but you need someone who's going to go supernova to get you to 70. It's just not going to happen. In other situation. And, you know, that was a late February game, where, you know, the playoffs are not in doubt anymore. They're going to make the playoffs. I was talking to someone on Twitter about this. I mean, they're going to have, I mean, what's the chances they lose the number one seed? They're four games ahead of the Spurs. They've lost five games in 59 tries. Why would we even think that they would lose four games moving forward? It's just not going to happen probably. So, I mean, they're going to have the top seed. And I understand why people are saying the Spurs are close. They are. The Spurs are very good. The schedule's going to change. They're going to have to play the Spurs again, but they're going to be at home for the majority of these games. And they've only lost five times in 59 tries. The odds are in their favor to win the top seed. I think they probably know that. I mean, how could you not? So I don't know. I kind of feel like it's just things that are beyond our explanation. And if we did have an explanation, I think it would not necessarily have any bearing on what they do once the playoffs kicks in. That's what I'm hoping, at least.
I think that that's an interesting point that you bring up, though, as far as like, you know, we're hesitant to compare Curry to Jordan. And I wonder sometimes just if it's the byproduct of like so many people compared LeBron to Jordan. And then, you know, obviously LeBron is LeBron, but it seems as of right now as if like obviously he's not going to overtake Jordan. But you see Curry come along and he's so small, you know, and like, you know, comparing LeBron to Jordan is a certain thing because LeBron is like even bigger than Jordan. And Jordan was such a physical guy, and Curry is like this little, you know, he's like my size. But there's no way that you get through the season and win as many games as they're doing without somebody who just has that extraterrestrial focus.
Yeah.
You know, because you can't, I mean, you look at the guys and they're, you know, not that they're infighting or not that they're bickering, but like, you know, stuff is happening. Like people are upset with their roles. It's a long season. There's so many games. And I think that it does take that transcendent player to just cut through all the noise from, especially because, you know, same team, like if you start getting to that point, like the national media is covering you every single game. Like everybody's talking about you. Steph Curry is the most famous basketball player in the world at this point. And it takes somebody who just doesn't care. Like, not that they don't care, but like they have that ability to cut through all the noise and just focus on the games and like, hey, we're going to win this game. And regardless if we're down 10 in the first quarter, we're down 10 with 4 minutes left. We're down 14 with whatever it was in the OKC game where they were like, you know, for him to be hurt and hobbling and to come back and just be like, you know what? I don't care. I'm going to win this game. And then they did. And
that's superhuman to me. It's just, you don't see that in the league. And
no, you don't. You never saw that from LeBron. I mean, we haven't seen that since Jordan. And so like to compare Curry to Jordan, I mean, it's a valid comparison for sure.
Oh, it's certainly valid. I think the reason I always try, you know, I'm hesitant is Jordan won six titles, and he essentially won, you know, he won three, took a break, and won three more. I mean, right. that's so beyond what Curry has accomplished at this point that I'm just saying, let's temper our comparisons until we get some time. You know what I mean? But
any comparison to Jordan is like there. I think there's two facets of it, and we're approaching one of them, which is like impact on each game or impact on the games of a season. And like kind of, you know, imposing will and being a singular force. And Curry is definitely comparable right now, I think. The other piece is legacy, which is, you know, it's too early for Curry, and you know, I think that's where the moment that LeBron stepped on the court, it was like, well, you know, the expectations of LeBron are that he might be the best player of all time, and he's 18 years old, and so there's always been that kind of expectation of like competing on the legacy front. The closest player otherwise has probably been Kobe, and that might even be more like stylistic, right? Like,
yeah, right. Like
he plays in a similar way, and he idolizes him, and is also very, very legacy centric. But you know, and probably in some cases it's single games at least, or stretches of games, Kobe was that as well. Where like impact on individual games, it was just like straight will and doing superhuman things that you're like, what? Like, I don't understand. certainly longer than Curry's been doing it. So I think there's probably a bunch of other guys that you can put in that conversation.
Yeah, certainly.
But right now it's about Iverson. Steph.
The funny thing is I was thinking the same thing. I mean, Iverson was remarkable to watch, and he was a guy that you knew was playing through pain. Like, you know, there's the whole practice thing, but he was playing through pain, and that was kind of awesome. That's what Curry brought this, you know, on Saturday. You know, Curry's ankles, that I don't even know. I kind of sometimes wonder, you know, we talk about, you know, Bram and I have talked about what other people think of Clay. I wonder what other people feel about Curry's ankles. Cause like, I know Warriors fans, when those ankles go, it's like, oh my gosh, this is like, our world is coming down. This is our worst fears come to life. It's over. He's out for the season. I know Bram wrote in his article, like, you know, is he going to be out for the season? Like, you really do have that fear, which is not freaking happening. Out. It's not going to happen. But well,
it's not healthy to have so, like, such a deep emotional connection to Curry's ligaments, you know?
No, it's not at all. It's crazy. It's crazy, but we all do.
Like, nobody feels that way about my wrist, you know?
Right.
Like, it's dark. It's dark and it's beautiful and it's sad and it's uplifting. And I just, I can't help but just fall down into that rabbit hole. But yeah.
I love the only one. Going back to Iverson real quick, it is kind of I know why you guys both thought of Iverson. It's that it's like implausible. You know, his effect on games felt like it shouldn't be happening. Like how is this guy? He's 5'11" and he's in like, he's just impacting the whole shape of the game so much more than you would expect out of that frame and out of somebody with that shooting percentage, and you know. and it's kind of similar with Steph, where you're just like, I don't understand. It's just not possible that you're impacting this game this much, because you're doing things that we've just never seen.
And
one other thing also that I wanted to kind of harken back to, because we went on a tangent, but in trying to explain, you know, the kind of how the Warriors just haven't looked maybe as sharp, or, you know, starting games not as sharp. I mean, maybe we're just overthinking it, and it's as simple as they've just played so many games on the road since Kerr came back. And looking at the schedule, it's been they've had six games at home, out of 16, so 10 games on the road, and you know, that is going to take a toll. And it's, you know, we're so you know, we just expect to see greatness from them every night, and like, gosh, if you're on the road for like, you know, two whole weeks, I think it was longer than 2 weeks. They were on the road from, Phoenix Suns. They played in Phoenix on the 10th, and then there was the All-Star break, and a lot of those guys were in Toronto for that. And then they didn't play their next home game until March 1st. So yeah, it was like 3 weeks that they probably just didn't even like get to visit their families. You know, that's a huge deal.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, so that is part of it. I mean, you know, there's a reason why, you know, what is it? No team has ever gone undefeated on a 7-game road trip in league history or something. I mean, there's a reason that for that. And it's, you know, it's funny because I think some, whatever site I recently did a Q&A with, I can't remember which one, but they were asking the shot of them getting 72 wins. And I was really like, before this road trip, I was like, well, let's see what happens with the road trip. And they actually did quite well in the end. I mean, they lost the one in Portland. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's certainly a reasonable explanation for the bad play. And again, I'm trying not to read too much into anything right now. I think maybe everything I see is just, I don't want to say boredom. I just want to say this season's a long haul. This could be a team. I mean, watching this team like makes it more and more apparent to me that they need to shorten the season.
Right.
82 games is just too long. And as good as this, and it's funny to say, it's kind of ironic to say that, right? Because we suffered 19 win seasons as Warriors fans, and then we finally get a 50, you know, 55, well, no, but, possibly 70 win one. I'm like, wow, this really shows they need to shorten this season.
But at this time of the season, you'd be like super stoked about the draft,
right?
You know,
yeah, and for the next 2 months. So I think this kind of shows to me that it's like you're getting a team that's it's hard to sustain any measure of energy at this point, especially on the road. You're right, Ivan. That's probably part of it.
The only thing that I'm worried about is if we do end up shortening the season, is that you see all these players taking shots at the Warriors this year, like, you know, Oscar Robinson, all these guys. If they shorten the season, they'll be like, oh, well, these bums, like, they only played 60 games. Like, they don't, you know, back in our day, we used to hit each other and they don't play any defense and they're not playing as many games. And I wonder how, if you then had like a historically great team that only played, you know, whatever.
It wouldn't have the legacy going for it.
Yeah. Like the legacy aspects would be very different, which I mean, you know, I like us needing to categorize teams and a legacy thing is like less important than players being healthy. And like having like functional bones as they move forward in their lives. So like I'm whatever they need to do is cool with me. But you know, it is.
And it's a huge part of sports fandom and like, you know, Hall of Fame and, you know, making comparisons to players, like whether they deserve it because the eras were different. And I mean, at least it's not like baseball, which is so much more steeped in like tradition and comparisons to like past greats. And the Hall of Fame is just like such a bigger deal in baseball. So at least we don't have to quite deal with maybe.
Yeah, but also baseball has, not to get into a whole other conversation, but like baseball has the whole steroids thing. And you look at somebody like Barry Bonds, it's like, obviously Barry is the, you know, single season leader in home runs, and he's probably never going to make the Hall of Fame because the writers are so deeply steeped in that element of history, like you're talking about. Right. But with basketball, I think that it's like it's there and people are very aware of it. But I think that like the rational fan is also very aware that the game, I think basketball in more ways than baseball or football changes on a year to year basis. And that like a team like the Warriors is changing basketball before our eyes, which is why it's so interesting to root for them and to watch them. Whereas, you know, baseball, the advent of the home run was then quickly quantified by like, oh, these guys are all just jacked up on steroids. But as far as, and this is like a very roundabout way of saying that Steph Curry is very small and
is on steroids.
There's no way he's on steroids. He's so tiny. And like, that's why people love him, because I think that America has gone through all of this crazy steroids stuff with baseball and with football. Obviously, all those guys are cracked out of their mind on HGH and everything. But with basketball, like, you look at these guys, you look at Steph, and there's no way that he's on I mean, as a fan of the Warriors, obviously, I know I'm prone to say this, but like, he's so tiny, and the fact that he can dominate the sport mostly just with his technique and with his mind and with his facility, I think says a lot, and says a lot about basketball as a whole.
Looking at the next few games, we've got the Thunder coming up, and we should be super excited about that. Just in response also to the you know, we had so many road games recently, like the rest of the season is super home heavy.
Yeah.
And I still kind of think that, and Nate's right, like we're still in the doldrums here, and this is a too long of a season. But I wonder at what point, like, the energy toward like the record starts kicking back in, you know. Like, the Warriors are playing so well, so out of their minds, in order to just keep, you know, get the streak alive to open the season. The 26 games, or I already forgot how many it was. Like at what point is like 10 games, is like the beginning of April, where we're like, okay, you know, lock back in, we got to get that 73.
Well, no, I think you saw that last in the last OKC game, and even last night too. I mean, they don't want to lose. They really don't want to lose. And I think that it's not because of the record, it's not because of 73. It's just because they really don't want to lose. They don't deal with losing well. And like, they're going to do whatever it takes. It doesn't matter how many games they end up winning. And that's why I'm not afraid of them like going solely for the record and burning themselves out and then getting blown out by somebody in the playoffs or whatever, is because like, it's not about the record. It's just about the fact that they hate losing. They hate to lose. And that's really, Draymond really leads the charge on that. And again, that's why it's not a big deal to me that he blew up in the locker room, is because like, he can't deal with losing. And I think that then, filters down to the rest of the team, primarily from him and him and Steph. And so, I mean, if they hit the record, great. If they don't, it's not a big deal to them, I think. And they're just going to, I mean, every game, they're just going to try not to lose. Like,
I totally agree. But at the same time, like it's going to be crazy to say this, but the difference here for this Warriors team is winning versus like destroying, right? Like they don't want to lose any game, and they're not going to throw games away. But at some point, they're super motivated by trying to prove something. And I think that happened in the beginning of the season. They really wanted to prove that they were, they're not a fluke, and that they can, you know, they can win as many games as any other team has done, way more so, keep the streak alive to prove that they can. And then once that kind of went away, then it's like, well, now we just want to win every game. I just wonder if there's going to be that extra motivation to kind of prove everybody, like, you know what, we're the best team that has ever played, and we're going to prove it to you right now by winning 73 games or 75 games or something.
It's almost
like
there. It's I mean, we're on the precipice of that. I mean, we that is a reality that could very well happen, and it's up to them, you know.
Yeah, totally. Let's just talk about tomorrow's game. So Oklahoma City Thunder playing at home. We just had them. Nate, what do you expect? Do you think that they're going to come out with much more fire this time?
That's a good question. I mean, well, this matchup changes dramatically without Iguodala and Curry. Obviously, Iguodala defensively, taking him out, if he were not to play, taking him out of the rotation would, you know, I'm not sure what they do if he's not available. And Curry offensively, you know, just makes it easier for a team like OKC to defend them, takes away the small ball effectiveness. But let's just say they play. And the thing I would really be interested in, I know OKC is a very good rebounding team. 30 rebounds better than the Warriors. Not sure about that. So I would like to see how that plays out. I mean, and that's just, to me, it just looked like they were getting out hustled to the boards. And yes, OKC tried to counter the Warriors when they went smaller with bigger guys. I mean, they have an interesting front line. They can go, when they go big, they can stay big, and they can keep spacing and stay big, which is important when they have Ibaka, and obviously Durant is big-ish. But so I'm kind of interested in how that will play out, just the effort on the boards more than anything else. Durant and Westbrook, I mean, those guys are going to do what they're going to do almost independent of what anybody throws at them. But, you know, once Durant went out the other night, you know, and you leave Westbrook to kind of, I definitely thought the Thunder and Westbrook in particular started pressing, and it was, they started just trying to do too much to try to keep on, hold on to that win. So the question is, if the Thunder get up, will the Warriors have what they need to get back in the game again? And my personal opinion is they just won't get up by enough. They won't create enough separation to put the Warriors away, and that'll let the Warriors hang around, and the Warriors hang around. I'm assuming Curry plays here. If the Warriors hang around, Curry's in the game, the Warriors will win, I think. I just don't think they have a good answer for him. I thought it was interesting to see, you know, they would put Adams on him, you know, bigger man. They were doing everything they possibly could to try to stop Curry, and just nothing worked. I don't know. It's a tough one. I mean, so much of it's going to rely, so much of them and what they do depends on Durant and Westbrook. And I thought Jared in his article today about the Thunder made a good point. Like they really did start playing prevent, what he called prevent offense. You know, it's like Donovan took a page out of his college, you know, strategy book and started, you know, trying to run clock almost and trying to like take shots late in the clock or go one-on-one instead of running an offense. And that's kind of the funny thing to me about that is that, you know, this is kind of the same critique people made about Scott Brooks. And suddenly, you know, they have these weird lineups on the floor. They have players who are space, quote unquote, spacing the court that couldn't possibly do that. And it's just Durant and Westbrook one-on-one. So I would expect not to see as much as that of that at the end of a game. I have to think they look at that film and decide that was a bad move. But otherwise, there's just a lot of kind of fluke things that I think were in play on Saturday that I just don't think will happen again.
On the ISO thing you're talking about, I mean, we have talked about this on the podcast before about, you know, there have been a few teams that are real ISO heavy that have had some relative success against the Warriors. And so, you know, I think I'm less surprised if Donovan goes to, you know, to Westbrook and try to isolate him and do a, you know, 1-4 set. Like, I think is probably as good a chance of any of stealing one.
And you know what else really worked for them? I mean, it really worked to post up Westbrook on Curry and Durant on whoever was guarding him. And that's why the end of the game thing kind of didn't make as much sense, because there were so many things they had done successfully, and the end of the game they just kind of stopped. I think Westbrook posting up Curry is successful every time you run it. I mean, it's something good is going to come of that, unfortunately. And this is not to bash Curry as a defender. Westbrook is just that good. He's a stronger, more athletic guy, or more explosive athletic guy. And Curry just had no hope to guard him in the post when they isolated him there. And no one is going to have any hope to guard Durant in the post. And, you know, Zito Madu of SB Nation also made the observation that, you know, Draymond Green did not do all that well against Durant that game either. So, you know, I mean, the Thunder posed some serious problems to the Warriors. They just had to figure out how to maximize those advantages throughout an entire game. And I think they just, for whatever reason, you know, the end of the game, they just sort of, I don't know, did they rest on their laurels? Did they panic when Curry came back in? I don't know what it was that explains why they did what they did, but there was definitely some of that stuff is in their control, and I can't imagine that happening again. And if Curry and Iguodala are out, I think there's just too many problems in that matchup with Curry and Iguodala out to win. But if Curry and Iguodala are out, I'm not even worrying about the outcome of a game anyway. It's just like, all right, well, whatever.
So between, like, if you had a, you know, from a purely basketball standpoint, 7-game series, would you rather go 7 games against the Spurs or against the Thunder this year?
Would I rather watch, or do I want to watch as a Warriors fan?
Watch. Not as a fan, just from a basketball standpoint.
From a basketball standpoint.
Yeah.
I want 7 of Thunder and Warriors.
Yeah, me too, actually.
I just think it's such an interesting watching to see if the Thunder can mature to a point where they really can make this two-star team. Not to dismiss anybody else, but the two stars were just so dominant one-on-one. If they can really make that work against a team that is truly, you know, predicated on being a unit. And whatever we say about Curry, the reason this whole offense works is because this team moves the ball. They move themselves like nobody else in the league right now. So you have kind of a huge contrast in like basketball philosophy. And I really think the Thunder could do it, like in theory. Like, I think they could push the Warriors if they were to maximize those talents to the 6-7 game point. I just think right now that Donovan, in his first year as coach, still hasn't figured out the same problem as Scott Brooks had, which was, how do I use these guys within a team concept, and how do I make teams pay when they try to overplay on Durant and Westbrook? I think we're seeing wrinkles and we're seeing some things here and there, but we just haven't seen anybody put it together because it's so tempting to just rely on them instead of trying to run an offense. I would love to see what Kerr would do with that team, to be honest.
Right, yeah.
Kerr or Popovich just coaching that team. I would love to see it. And I don't know what it would be, but it would be
I would pay all of the money in the world to see that.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny that we, I think, you know, it's kind of in vogue among basketball fans. And, you know, we like to talk about it. Like, we love teams that play really well together. They play as a unit. Like, that's kind of the, you know, the spirit of basketball is in like passing the ball a lot and working as this cohesive unit. But at the same time, like, it's a stars league, and I totally agree.
Yeah.
Like, I want to watch the Thunder more than I want to watch the Spurs, even though the Spurs are better and they have, you know, their stars in their own right, but they're such a system. They're such a machine that like, there's a little less opportunity for somebody to go off for 40 or to like just have, you know,
right,
crazy game. And Westbrook and Durant are two of like a handful of guys in the league where you're just like, oh my gosh, what are they going to do tonight?
Yeah,
totally. And the thing about the Spurs is that like, I feel like you almost you kind of know what you're getting ahead of time. You're like, man, these guys are going to pass the ball. It's going to be some amazing movement. As a purely basketball fan, I will enjoy the heck out of this. But with Durant and Westbrook, it's like, and it's the same with Steph, and that's why people love Steph Curry, is that like literally anything could happen. And that unknown is why we watch sports. I mean, sports are the last vestige of like, sports are the last thing that huge advertisers can put their money into, because it's live, because you can DVR something, but then chances are you're going to accidentally see the score. Like, sports are the last thing that's on TV that's like must see TV, you know. Even Breaking Bad or any of these shows are like primarily like you're watching them secondhand on Netflix or whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. You don't have to watch them in real time. But with sports and with basketball specifically, like, you have to be there. You have to be a part of it. Everybody's on Twitter. Everybody's like texting one another. Like, oh my, I mean, every game now that I write for the website, like, all of my friends, anytime anything crazy happens, I get like just a deluge of texts. And and so getting back to that, I hear a little beep. Yeah, there's a little text. But getting back to that point, you know, with the Spurs, the Spurs are like almost like you're DVRing the game, even if you're watching it in real time, because it's like, oh, I know what they're going to do. But with, you know, Durant and Westbrook, it's like, man, literally they could, either one of them could go off and it could just be the most transcendent thing you've ever seen, as was evidenced by that last game that we saw between the Warriors and the Thunder.
Right. And, you know, if there are any Spurs fans watching, I'm not at all dissing the Spurs. That series would be really fascinating in terms of the chess match that goes on, because there would be a lot of pieces to move. There would be tons of adjustments game to game, and it would be really fascinating just on a high level basketball chess match thing. I think just in terms of like, I'm sitting in a bar on a Saturday night, volume might be on or off or muffled, or people are just sitting around and trying to have a good time on a Saturday night. The Thunder and Warriors is probably the best thing the league has going right now. And people are talking about that. You know, well, ratings wise, it was the best regular season game in years, like non-Christmas. And you know, people are going to be talking about that game for the rest of the season. It was an amazing game. And again, in terms of, as I'm saying, I think the Warriors are just going to beat the top seed, a relatively meaningless regular season game. And the Thunder obviously had something to prove. The Warriors, you know, can't just drop games randomly, but, these two teams are headed to the playoffs. These teams are the elite of the league. This game is, there's nothing on the line except pride. So I think it's just a seven game series between those two would be fascinating to me.
Well, tomorrow should be fun. Bill Simmons, I think yesterday or today tweeted or a little while back tweeted a picture of the box score from that last game. And he said, this box score is drunk, and it really was. It was like the numbers, popping out from both sides from a lot of different guys, like just didn't make any sense. So, really looking forward to it. We've run out of time, and one thing I really wanted to talk about was throwing shade at Harrison Barnes. So that's a teaser for the next episode. Make sure you listen in. I'm gonna bring some heat, maybe.
Oh man, bring the ruckus.
Thanks, guys. This has been fun. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on
Harrison. I love you. Don't listen.
Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.